Welcome to the Millionaire Cookbook. I'm your host, Mohammed Sabri, and I'm looking to provide you with $1 million worth of value in a single podcast. All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Cookbook. This is episode 27, and I know in the introduction, I accidentally say episode 26, but that's just because I recorded this before the actual episode 26. This is just getting released later. But nonetheless, today we have Catherine Harrison. She's an author, a business owner, and she just does a lot of cool stuff. And just her view on life and curiosity and reflecting and just everything she's about, it's really inspiring. And I believe anybody listening, no matter your venture, age group, whatever it may be, you can learn something from her. And like I did say, she is an author. She does have a book out. I am currently reading the book. I highly, highly recommend it. We do briefly touch up on it in the episode, but for those interested, if you really like the episode and her work, the book is called Three Colors, 12 Notes. It can be found on Amazon and Kindle. So if you want to check that out, I highly encourage you to do so. But today we do talk about an array of different things. We do talk about a little bit about finding passions. I know I've already made an episode about that. But we mainly talk about curiosity, reflecting, kind of sitting down and looking at the bigger picture. We also talk about social media a lot. I didn't even intend to talk about social media during this episode, at least not as much as I did. But we really dive deep into that and how it really can both benefit you as well as detriment you at the same time, depending on how you use it. But yeah, a lot is talked about today. And obviously she talks about everything that she does as well and just her outlook on life in general. So really exciting episode. It's a bit of a longer one, but it is well, well worth it. I enjoyed the conversation a lot, and I really hope you, the listener, enjoys it just as much as I did. So with all that being said, enjoy the episode. All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Cookbook. This is episode 26, and today we're joined by Catherine Harrison. So, Catherine, how's it going?
Great. How are you? Happy New Year.
I'm great. Thank you. Happy New Year to you as well. So, just to give an audience an idea of who you are, how about you introduce yourself properly and kind of what you do?
Well, okay. I hope you have a long intro section because I do a whole bunch of stuff, but I'll start at the beginning. I run, for my quote unquote day job, I run a performance and behavior change consulting business in the Toronto area. And so what that means is we work with individuals, organizations, corporations, to help people be as effective as possible. So we do a lot of work with leadership effectiveness, cross-functional team effectiveness, strategy, customer engagement, sales and marketing, and really just helping people to simplify and distill what they're trying to achieve so that they can do it in as efficient and productive and aligned a way as possible, and at the same time be cultivating and contributing to and benefiting from awesome workplace culture.
Nice.
So that's my day job. And I'm also a musician, a songwriter, a painter. I'm a fierce environmentalist. I'm a dog lover. I do all of those things and try to ensure that on a, if not daily basis, certainly on a weekly basis, that I involve myself in all of those pursuits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so definitely a lot of hobbies outside your regular day job.
Indeed, yes.
Awesome. So how did you go about getting into all of this stuff?
Well, actually, when I was in my early 20s and wrapping up my degree here in Ontario, I had been working for a pharmaceutical company in their quality assurance labs. And so I was working in their microbiology department, in their chemistry department, just as a summer student, you know, as a university student. And the last summer that I was there, the general manager had said to the few of us that were there, you know, hey, when you finish with your degrees, if you're interested in a career in pharmaceuticals, give us a call. And so I finished my degree, and quite frankly, I wasn't interested in any sort of job. I was interested in traveling the world, playing my guitar, and hanging out. But I quickly realized that that needed required money, and so I thought, you know what, I'm going to call them and just explore opportunities. And as it turned out, they had a an entry level pharmaceutical sales rep position in downtown Toronto. So I threw my hat in the ring and I got it. And to be honest, that kicked off a 23-year career within the pharmaceutical industry, where I spent a lot of time in the commercial side of the business, sales and marketing, learning and development, sales management, business information, et cetera. And so when I left that career, Mo, maybe 8 years ago, I took some time to reflect on what I loved about it and what I didn't love about it. And what I determined I really loved about it was the human aspect of business, the science and the art of it. I loved the notion of collecting human beings in a common pursuit, you know. And so that's what I decided I would try to create, which is a consultancy business where I helped others, you know, connect, create, and communicate as effectively as possible to attract and develop and promote individuals into an organization, and to get the best out of all of those people. And then to cultivate, as I mentioned, a very human-centered workplace culture that enabled people to really bring their best selves into the workplace. So, you know, hung out the shingle, and through lots of trial and error and successes and failures over the past 8 years, have honed that into the performance and behavior change consultancy that it is now.
Wow, very cool. And I really like how you brought up that you were into something else before for a while. And once you got out of that, you thought, what did I like and what I didn't like about it? And I can relate to that really, really well because when I first got into the entrepreneurship space, I got into a digital marketing program, basically try to start a business based around that. And, you know, I love the business model, I love the idea of it, but the service I was offering to people, that's what I didn't like about it. So that's when I took, like you did, what I liked about it and took it with me. And what I didn't like, I kind of left it and I kind of created my own path. And I saw a lot of people in that circle as well kind of just mold their own path. So I'm sure you'd agree that nothing's black and white. And if you do try something and want to mold it into your own, you should definitely try to be as a unique as possible to fit your, I guess, interests and passions, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a whole bunch to reflect on and to explore on. And you know, as you move through life, as you know, move from being a young adult in your 20s and then move into your 30s, 40s, and 50s, and beyond, there's always opportunity to pause and notice, who am I right now? What are my values right now? What am I hoping to achieve right now? What are my belief systems? How do I want to live my life? What are my values? And then, are my daily activities in alignment with those values, right? And we spend a lot of our time working. And so it's important that, although sometimes, you know, hey, you got to pay the bills, and your job isn't always going to be the, you know, fantastic all the time. But are you willing to reflect on what are the good things that it brings me? What are the things I may or may not like? What are the things I don't even know? Like, you know, who am I interacting with in this space that I can learn from, even though I might initially think, yeah, I don't like that guy, or I don't really like, you know, are there Are there ways of keeping an open mind as you move through life and as you move through experience and as you begin to know more about yourself that you kind of, you know, you just keep, I what's coming to mind right now, Mo, is the symbol of a sculptor, right? If you consider yourself a block of stone, and as you move through life every week or month or year, you start to chisel away, you know, you start to form who you are. And that's it's like a work in progress your whole life.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that analogy. I definitely, definitely agree with it. And I'm sure people listening can relate to that as well. And that is just kind of one step at a time. And things happen over time, you know, they don't happen overnight or anything, especially something like deep reflecting, you know, you don't just reflect one day and your whole life changes. It's an ongoing process.
Absolutely. And there's, you know, it takes some honesty and some vulnerability and some courage to really look at what's going on and to really be honest with yourself. And it also takes a lot of accountability,
yeah,
right? That it's when we talk about, and you mentioned, you know, entrepreneurship, and you talk about setting forth on things, it's not just about sitting there waiting for things to happen to you. There's a real sense and a requirement of personal accountability to, you know, to learn and to answer the call and to pick up the phone and to, you know, do your research and to read and to learn and to self-advocate and to take responsibility for things when they don't go well. And all of those things are really important attributes that you can cultivate in yourself so that you have not only you're not only ready when opportunity strikes, but you're actually more openly aware of when opportunity is available.
Definitely, 100%. I really like the way you worded that and put it, you know, because I think a lot of people, they're aware of that, but they just can't put it into words or explain it. So you did that really well.
Oh, thank you.
Of course. And as far as your hobbies go, you know, I have a whole episode on hobbies, why they're important, how to get into them. But I'm wondering, in your specific situation, you know, you have a lot of interests and a lot of things you're pursuing on the side. Are these things that, you know, you found right away? Did you kind of find them along the way? Did it take you a while to find some things? So on and so forth.
A little bit of both. I've always been a very curious person and a very interested person in that, you know, when I notice something, if it catches my eye or catches my interest, I dig a little bit, you know, I think, oh, that's interesting. I wonder how people do that. Or I'd like to learn more about that. So I read a book about it or, you know, watch a movie about it or talk to some people who do it. Or these days, I mean, literally everything is at our fingertips, right? You can learn, about anything by asking Google. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you gotta go deeper than the surface sometimes. But really, if you cultivate a curiosity, you can really learn anything. So for me, some of these hobbies have been things that I've always been interested in, like, you know, nature. I've always been interested in, and music. I've always been interested in. And being creative, I've always been interested in, but not necessarily in a formal way. So, you know, I play guitar and I write songs, and people always assume I must have been playing guitar my whole life. I probably took guitar lessons and I was in a band when I was a teenager and all that stuff. And it's not true.
Yeah.
I loved music and I dabbled with it a little bit, but I didn't actually get a guitar until I was in my early 20s. So sometimes these opportunities and the real trigger, the real catalyst that drives you to get more passionate and more engaged in something, you know, happens later in life. Again, it's cultivating a mindset that there's always something to learn and there's always something to engage with. And you're, again, that marble sculptor is never done. You can keep honing it and chiseling it and forming it as you move forward. I think that's really important for younger adults, for young people in general. I think there's a a cultural misperception that somehow you've got to have it all figured out by the time you're 25 or something. I got to know what I'm going to do and how I'm going to do it, and I'm going to make money and I got to do this. And my advice would be chill out a little bit, like, and not in a way of like be lazy, but chill out in terms of thinking that you have to be a fully formed, complete, static person. And focus more on how do I keep learning? How do I keep progressing? How do I keep growing? How do I keep cultivating that sense of personal responsibility and accountability and creativity and community and compassion? You know, those are things that will really serve you well as you move through life.
100%. And I think the biggest takeaway of that is kind of just digging into things and just being curious about things. Because in the episode about hobbies, we touched up on, people that say, I don't have any interests, or I don't have any talents, I don't know what to do like in my free time, I feel like, you said it best. I feel like if people just questioned things, got curious about things, and just dug into things, kind of just, put your foot in the water type of thing, it will take them so far in the long term.
And again, it goes back to that sort of cultural narrative that we are all conditioned to think that, oh, you know, if my quote unquote talents don't manifest as this, then I don't have any. And one of the really simple activities I have in my book is, you know, there's like four squares and it says, hey, you know, draw a tree, draw a fish, draw a sun, draw a mountain. Because when you're children, all kids draw and they color and they go, look at this, it's amazing, right? And then we go through life and we start to judge ourselves, or other people start to judge us. And then we stop actually putting it out there. We stop creating just for the fun of creativity. And I think that that's important to stay connected to that sense of fun and play and exploration when you think about hobbies. It doesn't always have to be awesome. It just has to be the process of it, which is you're engaged, you're playing. Maybe it looks like crap when you're done. Who cares? You know, have some fun with it. And that's the whole point of hobbies.
100%. Totally agree. And I heard you touched up on your book just like a little bit for a second, and that was actually going to be what I was going to ask you about next. So, how about you let the audience know what your book's about, what it's called, and what motivated you to write it? I actually have the copy you gave me right here next to me on my
Oh,
desk.
cool. The book is called Three Colors, 12 Notes, and the subtitle is The Alchemy of Creativity, Curiosity, and Human-Centered Leadership. And it is a collection of reflections of life stories, both personally and professionally, and really how those three things, curiosity, creativity, and human-centeredness, have formed my experiences to date. And I also, you know, in telling some of the stories and in really opening myself up to the reader to share my own inner reflections and my own inner journeys, I guess, about some experiences, positive and negative. I also invite and encourage the reader to reflect on their own lives and some of their own experiences and how they might get more curious, or, you know, cultivate more of an open, exploratory mindset and play a little bit and, you know, think about how their behaviors and actions are aligned with what's really important to them in their lives. So, you know, I've got paintings in there and song lyrics in there and lots of different stories. And so, you know, it's an easy book to pick up and read. You don't have to read it all in one setting, and there's lots of different topics. And really, you know, I had been writing bits and pieces of it over the past couple of years, Mo. And then when the pandemic started back in March, April, I guess, when things for my business really had slowed down, I just decided to take the opportunity to just focus on it and get it done. So I launched it in November.
Nice. And what would you say the target audience for the book is? And when people read it, what is your goal? When someone's done reading it, what do you want them to get out of it?
Well, it might sound silly to say. I think the target audience is really anybody from, teen years up to 98. I don't know. I mean, if you're a young, if you're an adult and you can read, I think that there's probably a sweet spot there. But you have to be interested in people. You have to be interested in stories. You have to be interested in like I love reading biographies, and I love reading little stories about people's experiences and how they had aha moments and how they overcame challenges and opportunities. And so that's, that's, it's a collection of that. And what I'm hoping people would get out of it would be a reconnection to their own sense of curiosity and a reconnection to their own sense of playfulness and of exploration and of, getting really in touch with who they are, like increasing their own sense of self-awareness and how amazing they are, and maybe recognizing what parts of themselves they've been, putting down or keeping under wraps, that really should be brought to light and cultivated a little bit more.
All right, very, very cool.
But I have a
And
question for you, actually,
yeah, of course.
since you mentioned you've got it sitting right there. What was your kind of takeaway, or what was your kind of feeling after you've read parts of it?
Honestly, there's a lot. I really like the creativity part of it, because I feel like it actually led me to my next question, but I'll touch up on it a little bit before I ask. I just like how creativity, it takes you very far in life. You know what I mean? If people just sat down with their thoughts, reflected, like you preach in the book and like you preach in general, then so much can happen. That's how all my ideas came forth. That's how so many great ideas around the world came forth. If people just sat with their thoughts instead of just, what I like to tell people is they just stimulate themselves too much. They always have something playing in the background, whether it's music, TV, whatever. A lot of people, they'll wonder why their best thoughts or ideas come in the shower. It's because it's not being stimulated. So that's probably my main takeaway and my favorite part so far. I still haven't finished reading it, obviously, but that's what I really liked about it.
Yeah, that notion of recognizing, like we already talked about, like we have literally the world in our hands these days with our smartphones and our computers, but the conscious decision to turn it all off, every day for little bits and pieces and really just cultivate your own thoughts and your own reflections is such a powerful tool.
100%. And regarding creativity and as well as leadership, I really wanted to ask you, because a lot of people, they'll kind of go through life thinking, I'm just not the creative type, people are more creative than me, or I'm not a born leader and I can never be a leader. Do you think it's true that, some people are born to be creative and be leaders and some aren't? Or do you think that everyone can work up to that kind of status?
I think that's a really important question and a really interesting question and a complex question. And really, that question could lead to hours, if not days, of really interesting dialogue with people. Because I think it's both. I do think that there are certain, we know that there are certain preferences, personalities, social styles, thinking patterns, genetic predisposition, cultural predisposition. We know that there are certain things that make it easier for someone to be creative or to someone be an effective leader. However, the flip side of that is I also believe strongly that everybody has within them a sense of creativity and a sense of leadership that just needs to be cultivated, that needs to be nurtured, that needs to be developed and needs to be then practiced, right? So you don't develop a skill just by saying, I want to be a great basketball player. You actually have to learn the skill, practice the skill, fail at the skill, get coaching on the skill, apply the skill, and then like over and over and over and over again. And it's no different really with creativity and leadership, right? It's about, and the first step really is getting more familiar with the things that you just like, right? If you think, if you, like you say, well, some people say, oh, I'm just not creative. My question to them would be, what are the things that are really interesting to you? And get them to write a list of things that they're really interested in. If I gave you a day where you couldn't go on your computer and you couldn't do anything, but I gave you an like a virtual library of everything, I guess that is your computer these days. Mm-hmm. What would be the things that you'd want to learn about? You know, right. What are the things that you, without any judgment or any limitation, think, oh man, I wish I could XXX. If only I could ... Like sort of fill in the blanks on some of those things. And you will likely come up with a series of things that you love. Now you might say, maybe your ... was, oh, I wish I could be an NBA basketball player. And you're like, but you know, for a variety of reasons, never going to happen. Okay. But what's the next step? What is it specifically about that that you really love? What else might you be able to be interested in or involved in that either is connected to basketball or is connected to sport or is connected to competition or is connected? Maybe you love basketball because you actually love the energy and the music and the dynamics of the whole NBA experience, but you just kind of associated that with basketball, right? Mm-hmm. And really what you want to be is a DJ. Like, who knows? Yeah. So it's not until you take the time to really like unpack and discover what you like and why you like it that you start to create some little threads. And then think about, what did you do when you were a kid that you just did and enjoyed and never once questioned?
Right.
Right? Like I said earlier, most children, if you give them a bunch of paper and some crayons or some paints, they'll just start drawing and painting and making, and they'll be like, look how awesome it is. And their parents will be like, oh my God, it's beautiful. Right. Mm-hmm. And so connect to some of those early experiences that you just love doing. And you know, 99% of the time you will find areas of your life that are creative. And some people think, oh, I'm just not a creative person. And yet maybe they love gardening and that's really creative. Maybe they love cooking. Well, that's really creative. Maybe they love building decks and fences. Guess what? That's creative.
Yeah.
You know, you work with materials, you envision something, then you plan for it, then you build it. Like there's so many interests. Maybe you love fashion. That's creative. You know? Yeah. So it's really, again, it goes back to that curious, cultivating a sense of curiosity and exploration and getting out of our common judging mind. And just, you know, letting us be free a little bit.
100%. And like you said, like creativity basically comes in a lot of forms. You know, it's not just confined to music, art, drama, like we're taught in high school, you know?
Yeah.
It's literally everywhere. Like even in entrepreneurship, running an online business, there's creativity in that. You know, you get creative with the way you know, with your product or service, you get creative with that. If you work with clients, if you want to report to them, you get creative in the way you report to them, in the way you handle business in general. Like there's so much, even in fitness too, you know, creating workouts, you got to get creative sometimes. Like let's say you go into the gym and the machine you want is taken and the gym is about to close in like 10, 15 minutes. You got to get creative and see like, all right, how can I tackle the muscle group that I want without doing what I was set out to do originally, you know?
Absolutely.
Same thing with like goal setting.
Absolutely. And you know, the other question you asked was about leadership. And again, mm-hmm. some people sort of naturally gravitate to those kinds of things, but think about where in your life you have an opportunity to lead. And it might not be just functional leadership, like I am a leader, or I'm like a team captain, or I am a business leader, or whatever. But where in your life do you have the opportunity to positively influence others? That's leadership. You know, where do you have the opportunity to positively impact your family, your friend group, your community, your school, your business place? You know, maybe you create, like you say, you mentioned, you know, gyms and working out. Maybe you are a leader in that you help others get more connected to their own fitness and just, you know, moving more and bringing in some physical fitness and health and wellness into their lives. So there's so many ways that we limit ourselves when we think of being a leader or being creative. And I just really encourage people to think about it's really all about it's really all about putting yourself out there and impacting life, impacting people around you, impacting the environment around you. All of those things are connected to those.
100%. And I'm glad you touched up on that because I feel like a lot of people, you know, it's, I kind of blame the movies and like stuff like that on this, but I feel like a lot of people, their idea of leadership is like this boss that's very extroverted and loud and tells everyone what to do and everything. At that point, that's not a leader. That's just like a dictator, you know? The best way to be a leader is to lead by example. That's pretty much the way you put it.
And if you think about, you know, one of the things that really comes to mind for me is that a leader is someone that you follow willingly, right? They don't need to, like you mentioned, be a dictator. They don't need to either reward you incessantly or penalize you incessantly, right? So we call it the carrot and the stick. You know, you don't need to dangle the carrot in front of everybody, and you don't need to bash them on the knuckles all the time. But you set a vision and you are able to communicate and inspire and motivate and support other human beings so that they go, I want to go where she's going. That's cool, right?
100%. And like an example I can give is myself, you know, like before, especially in middle school, early high school, I didn't really see myself as a leader, especially because in the earlier days of my life, I was very quiet and I tended to myself a lot. Like if you told me when I was in middle school or like grade 9 or 10 that I'd be hosting a podcast, I'd be like, no, no way. But you know, as once I found my passions and really dive deep into them and as well as documented that to other people, that's when the leadership started kicking in because a lot of people just see like, hey, like I see your work, I love it, and I get inspired by it. That's leadership. You know, I didn't tell people what to do directly. I just kind of shared my experiences, shared the way I did things, and people just followed along type of thing. And they got their own ideas, molded it into their own. And to me, that's leadership. You know, I don't have to be this loud guy that's bossing everyone around. So.
Well, and that's not your style. And I think what an important part that you've just talked about, Mo, is the fact that, you know, you connected to doing what you're passionate about and doing it with sincerity and authenticity. And people can tell. People can tell when you're being true, when you're being honest and authentic and you're not posing as something, right? And so that's another aspect of people wanting to follow and people wanting to engage and people wanting to be part of what you're doing when they can tell that there's a sincerity and an authenticity to the passion and the support that you're putting forth. And that's a really important aspect to leadership, personal leadership, as well as, you know, leading others is that notion of being genuine, being honest, being transparent, being open and authentic.
Definitely. And it all goes back to giving value too. You know, an example I can give in the fitness industry, people will connect a lot more with the person that not only posts pictures of themselves and their progress, but they share tips and tricks on how they got there and, you know, what they did in the gym that day and why they did it, how it helped them, versus the person who just posts pictures of themselves. They don't give any help to people, they just say, you know, look at me, look at the way I look. I did this in the gym. It's like, all right, cool. But why did you do this in the gym? How did it help you? How can it help me if I do it? It's all about just giving value to the people, in my opinion.
Yeah. And you know, like one of the, I mean, human beings are social creatures, right? We are wired that way over millennia. We have been wired that way. And one of the best ways to lead and influence is by giving and by giving openly and honestly. And it's because that, you know, in our way of judging people intuitively, there's something called reciprocity. And when somebody gives me something, I feel like, oh, there's some sort of trust and kinship and rapport, you know, when it's just about like, look how great I am. And, oh, if you want to do this here, you know, buy this and do that. It seems incongruent and it doesn't cultivate trust, right? It doesn't cultivate a sense of connection. And so all those things that you're talking about really taps into our innate desire for connecting with others and feeling part of something, feeling part of a tribe, feeling part of a community.
100%. And it's really funny how you brought up the part where people are like, you know, if you want to know more, like buy this or that. No one's going to buy from you if they don't trust you. And the way you build trust with people is by building rapport, giving value. Like you said, you got to give to people. And overall, you got to help people for them to help you in a way as well.
Yeah. And you feel better.
Yeah.
You know, most people feel better when they are somehow contributing or in service to others. You know, like one of the things I always say, if you're feeling crappy about stuff going on in your life, go help somebody who needs help. And, you know, helping others makes you feel better.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't talk about this too much publicly. You know, anyone that knows me privately knows this about me, but I just very, very dislike social media. And it sounds ironic because I'm always on there posting, but just the concept of it and the way society molds it, I really don't like, you know, just posting wins only, trying to look as perfect as possible for people, seeking validation from people we probably don't know. I feel like social media, it's such a powerful tool. And if you use it properly, you're going to get a lot out of it. Like for you, you know, you'll post a lot of genuine stuff and you'll post a lot of value as well. Myself as well, I'll post genuine things. I'll post value. I'll help people. I know a lot of people the same thing. And I just feel like if you use it properly, you are going to feel a lot better about yourself versus the other person who doesn't feel that good using social media because they're probably using it for the wrong reasons or, you know, they just have a different idea around it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, we're the same that way. I have a real love-hate relationship with social media. And I think I write about that in the book a little bit, and I've certainly written a lot of blog posts about it, where you're absolutely right. It can be an incredibly powerful positive tool, and it can be an incredibly powerful negative tool.
Yeah.
And I think we need to be very mindful of how we use it, of how it influences our sense of self, how we feel about ourselves. Again, the human mind is a comparative mind, right? We're constantly looking and comparing and seeing what's a threat, what's a benefit. And I know even just for myself, if I get sucked into the social media vortex, I can start feeling pretty bad about myself because, hey, look at all these people who have everything. And, you know, like, it's just, and you can just spend a lot of time going down the rabbit hole of negativity and comparison as opposed to using it in small doses as a way to really connect, as a way to really learn, as a way to really contribute, as a way to create community. But it is a thoughtful and very important conscious decision that people need to make in terms of, you know, use the technology, don't let it use you. That's really important. And I think very important, Mo, for people, you know, your age and in the younger demographic, because they've been raised with it, right? And so it seems innocuous and it seems so innocent, but it's really important to recognize how do you unplug a little bit and As I mentioned in the book, solitude doesn't mean listening to other people in your head. Solitude and reflection means turning everything off and listening to your own thoughts, you know, and thinking about your own perspectives and your own feelings and taking time to reconnect to that. So I think that's a really important aspect that you bring up.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you said as well. And as far as unplugging goes, you know, there's a lot of ways to go about it. My main way that I practice daily is I give myself like a kind of social media curfew, and I give myself, you know, like a minimum time in the day. So for me, after a certain time at night, I'm not checking anything social media related, because I don't want to see something I potentially don't like. And then, you know, it just gets me thinking, and, you know, I just don't sleep properly, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And same thing with in the morning, you know, I don't want to check social media and see, again, potentially something I don't like. And it just sets my day off not on the best tone. So I'll get all my work done in the morning, and then, you know, later on in the afternoon when I'm having lunch or whatever, that's when I'll start, you know, checking social media and stuff. Because at that point, I got all my non-negotiables done for the day. And if I do see something I don't like, well, so be it. But I'm at a point in my social media where I've literally just unfollowed slash blocked anything that may trigger negative emotion in me. You know, I used to follow so many trends, so many people, and it's like, you know, why am I doing this? What's this for? So I went from following, I think, like 1,500 people down to, I think I'm like at the low 500s now. So I got rid of like 1,000 people, and it's nothing against them. It's just not what I want to see. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But this is a perfect example of what we were talking about earlier, is taking personal responsibility for your life.
Yeah.
You're saying, you know what? My life, the 24 hours in each day of my life is mine. I can choose where I put my attention. I can choose where I put my emotional reactivity. And so I'm going to pay attention to what's important to me. I'm going to wake up in the morning before I go, you know, get involved in all of those influences. I'm going to write down what's important to me. I'm going to focus on the actions and behaviors and decisions that are aligned with me. And then, yeah, I want to use it in a way that's positive and powerful for me. But I'm also going to be fully responsible and fully accountable for what and who I let into my life. So that's fantastic advice and such a great example of role modeling. The kind of accountability I think people can really think about if they're feeling any sense of like being less than optimal right now in terms of their headspace or their emotional state, or just feeling yanked around by their phone and all the notifications and the pinging and the ponging. It's like, but it's you have the choice. Turn it off, set some boundaries, you know.
Yeah.
Unfollow the people that make you feel bad about yourself. Follow the people that make you feel good about yourself. So good for you, Mo. I think that's a really good example.
Yeah, thank you. And it's really, really easy with our phone. You know, it sounds ironic because it's at our fingertips, but you know, there are tools that make you stay away from that. So like on iPhones, for example, I don't know how it is for Androids, but on iPhones, at least, there's something called app limits, where you can set a limit for like how long you can use an app for each day, whether it's 30 minutes, an hour, whatever. But what I primarily used last year is, so I'll have like a window of time, you know, pretty much when I wake up to, you know, when I have lunch, that window that I just talked about, my phone will let me access those apps.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
So after a certain time, you know, those apps unlock, I can finally check them. And before that time, I can check them, but I'm asleep at that time, so I'm not checking anything. So it's a really powerful tool, and I feel like a lot of people can benefit from that. You know, I'm at a point where I've built enough self-discipline where I don't need that anymore. I just remember like, all right, it's this time of night, just don't click this. Or it's this time in the morning, I got to do stuff, don't open this app. But yeah. I feel like for someone who's just starting out, it's definitely something useful. And if that doesn't work, just delete the app off your phone. And that's a lot easier because you actually have to go through the process of opening the app store, clicking download, waiting for it to download, logging back in,
a lot of people, they're just going to get lazy at that point to check something. They're like, you know, whatever, I'll just leave it. So that's another alternative.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, if anyone listening is thinking, oh, I'd like to do that, but I don't know if I'm ready to do it, that's okay too.
Yeah.
Even just having, like, taking the moment to say, how would it benefit you if you had more limitations on your app usage, on your social media usage? Like, if you can actually, to yourself, reflect on what would I have, or what benefits would I get if I limited myself? And then you can, if you start to see, wow, there are these three or four benefits that would be good for me, all of a sudden it's motivating for you to go, oh, there it is in black and white. I'm more motivated now to do something about it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I made an episode on this as well, like my experience just detoxing from Instagram for 30 days, meaning I didn't have the app on my phone for 30 days. And all I used it for was posting these podcasts. So I'd re-download it literally 2 minutes, just screenshot the podcast on Spotify, announce that I'm releasing it, post it, delete the app again. You know, I'm not scrolling or anything. And as far as DMs go, you know, there's the browser. There's Instagram on your browser. I'll just go on my computer, 5 minutes, reply to anyone that's asking a question or like someone that sent me something. That's it. You know, I'm not mindlessly scrolling. And I feel like a lot of people get stuck in that trap, especially with the explore page, because it's literally set to your interests. You know, you're just scrolling mindlessly and you don't know why. And it's just, it feels good. It all comes down to like the little literal dopamine overload that you're getting in your brain when you're scrolling.
That's it. It's no different than being at a casino and playing the slots. It's just dopamine hit, dopamine hit, dopamine hit, dopamine hit, and you're being yanked around by, you know, the software engineers. So even just knowing that, to go, yeah, I'm going to use technology, not let it use me. I'm going to go in, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to search specific people I want to follow. But the notion of just scrolling, I'm not going to go down that vortex. I'm, you know what, I'm going to take back some power, some personal power, right? And take back some energy and attention and focus. And I mean, you and I talked about before, you know, physical fitness and health and well-being and the power of sleep and stuff. And I think that oftentimes people say, oh yeah, I just don't have any time to work out. I don't have any time to cook. I don't have any time to, you know, to get good quality sleep. Usually what they mean is I haven't made the time because I'm busy filling it with all this crap.
Yeah.
100%. So just making a conscious choice to shut down some of those things, then again, frees up opportunity for you to insert some of these other health and wellness activities, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like literally everybody on social media can benefit from a little detox. You know, they don't have to go as extreme as I did for a month, but just go a day without it. You know, right before you go to bed, delete the apps and then go through the next day. Don't even check anything, nothing. Go to bed. And then the day after, re-download them. See how your day went, you know, or like go for the weekend or the week. Whatever you feel is necessary, just get a taste of it and you're going to feel really, really good. I guarantee anybody this.
It is such a powerful exercise to do, because you'll really notice your inclination, that sort of addictive inclination to check it when you're bored, to check it when you don't know what to do, to check it when you're standing in the grocery store lineup, to check it like when you're, you know, waiting for something to cook. That in and of itself is pretty interesting. And then also to notice, like, you don't really miss anything.
You don't. Right? Yeah. I remember when I cleansed my Instagram of like unfollowing 1,000 people, I was thinking, I'm like, you know, do I need to do this much? Like, am I going to miss out on stuff? It's been over a year since I've done this and I've literally not missed out on anything, because I just found that the people I care about the most, I'm following right now and I don't plan on getting rid of them. And that's really all I need. You know, you don't need to keep up with like everyone in every corner of the world. You know, you just have your set circle, whatever that is. And that's really all you need.
That's right.
And one more thing about social media before we move on to the next topic, you know, what people need to realize is the developers make it addictive on purpose. And it's not, and it has obviously has so much to do with the explore page, you know, giving you interest and stuff that you know, or they know that you'll, you know, keep scrolling on. But it all comes down to the colors too. You know, there's a reason that these apps have these vibrant, playful colors, is because it literally sucks you in. That's why you walk into a casino, you know, you gave the option, you gave the example of the slot machine. You walk into a casino, it literally looks like an arcade. You know, there's lights everywhere. It looks all playful. That's meant to suck you in.
Yeah. Have you seen, did you watch The Social Dilemma, documentary?
Yeah, I watched it a few days ago, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating, eh?
Yeah, it's super, super eye-opening. If anyone's listening to this, I definitely recommend that documentary. Very, very worth it.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty, again, it goes down to taking accountability, right? And being curious enough to learn. Like, you can still make choices to use it all you like, but at least be informed, you know?
Exactly.
Just learn.
Awesome. So the next thing I want to touch up on is, you know, having multiple passions and ideas, because, you know, you preach curiosity, and when you're curious and very curious, you're going to be, you know, digging deep into a lot of different things. And someone like me, I have a lot of interests and I have more than one passion. And, you know, there's other people in the same boat as me, and it comes down to, like, you know, I have two options as far as a career path goes, you know. What advice would you give to someone with more than one passion and idea? Because, you know, shiny object syndrome, it's a real thing where someone will dive into something for 2-3 months. It doesn't really work. And then they hop onto the next, you know, quote unquote, shiny object, the next idea, try it out for a bit, doesn't work. And then they just keep hopping. And then a year goes by and they got nothing done. So what's your recommendation for someone in that boat where you have more than one passion and they know they need to stick to one? How do they choose that one thing?
Well, again, that's a really great and complex question. I don't think you need to just choose the one thing, but I do think you need to be thoughtful about it, and you need to be thoughtful about how you approach it. So, you know, the shiny object thing, I mean, I'm a shiny object thing person. I mean, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's interesting. Now, again, it's a skill and a competency to develop attentional focus, right? And attentional focus means that although I might be interested in 5, 6, 10, 20 different things, and although I might decide to follow that thread for 10 or 15 minutes today, just to kind of go, oh, I want to scratch that itch a little bit and learn about such and such. But you also have to make conscious choices about how you plan your time, plan your focus, plan your attention, and then manage distractions. Like we just talked about, a lot of social media, managing distractions. But, you know, I think it sounds kind of paradoxical to say, on the one hand, especially when you're young, I think you should be trying a bunch of things. I think you should go, oh my God, I'm so excited about this thing. I'm going to follow this passion. Maybe you do it for a couple of months and then you stop and you switch to something else. As long as you take the time to reflect and say, what did I like about it? What didn't I like about it? What have I learned? What can I bring through to the next experience? What should I, like, never do again, right? Yeah. That's also a really important curious nature, is instead of just bouncing around from thing to thing to thing without ever taking the time to think, reflect, and learn about yourself, then it's less productive. But if you spent a year trying out a whole bunch of different things. And I did this at the beginning of my business. I tried a whole bunch of different approaches, and some of them worked and some of them were like huge failures. But then I learned, I went, wow, I won't do that again. Like, seemed like a good idea, but bad idea. Or I took on a project and I'm like, yeah, that wasn't really great. Like, that's not really where my competency is, nor is it where my passion is. So I shouldn't take on that work anymore. Right. Yeah. So I think we have to be careful that we choose one or the other as a good way of moving forward, right? Not everybody has to identify one passion that they have to put all their focus on. But I do think that whatever you're doing in that moment, be committed to it. You know, this whole notion of like multitasking doesn't really happen from a neuroscientific perspective. It just means we're doing a lot of things badly at the same time.
Yeah.
As opposed to saying, I'm going to focus and really put my effort and attention on this one thing. So I don't know if I answered your question or not. I kind of threw out a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh yeah, no, that was perfect. I really liked your answer. And I feel like the main takeaway is it's okay to try different things, especially when you're young, because I feel like it's important. Like you said, you get to find out what you like and don't like, but it's important to try one thing at a time, because I feel like a lot of people, they'll take on everything at once, then it becomes overwhelming. And then when it comes to sit back and reflect, they don't really know where to start, and they don't know what they like and don't like because they did so much. It's like, well, I think I like this about this thing, but it might have came from this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And so again, that it's choosing to, and there are so many great resources. I mean, obviously, there's a bunch of reflection questions in the book that are easy ways to get started on this. But even if you Google anything right now on like, what are some good reflection questions for me as I go through like professional development or figuring out what I like in my life or figuring out what I want to do with my life or figuring out my likes and dislikes, just Google it. You could find so many, but it then takes the accountability and the personal responsibility to do it.
Yeah.
And just take some time, and that learning about yourself and learning, you know, what really energizes you and learning what really depletes you are such important activities and things to focus on, so that you can, you know, really, again, you learn to be more efficient and productive in all aspects of your life. And when you do fail, and when the wheels do fall off, you're like, okay, that was, you know, that didn't work. And yeah, I might feel kind of despondent, and I might feel kind of depressed about it. I might feel kind of bummed out, and I might feel kind of embarrassed, or who knows, right? Yeah. That too is an interesting opportunity. And also to recognize that you are not alone. Every single person, if you're listening to a podcast like this, that means you're interested in stuff. You're interested in self-improvement. You're interested in, you know, optimal well-being. And just know that, you know, if you don't have it all figured out, or things, you know, you bump around from this to that, just know you're not alone. That's like a human experience, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that in and of itself makes you feel that it's worthwhile trying out different things.
Yeah, that's awesome. Definitely agree. And I just want to go into the last topic of the main portion of the podcast, which is habit building, because I know you touch up on that as well. So specifically habit building for the year ahead, 2021, what tips would you give, especially because I feel like going into this year, it's a bit different than every other year. You know, 2020, it's mentally and physically drained / exhausted a lot of people around the world. And I feel like sticking to New Year's resolutions may be harder than usual this year. And that's not to blame anybody for their self-discipline. It's just the way things are at the moment. So, yeah, what tips would you give in regards to that?
Well, there's two things. I mean, first of all, just with respect to any sort of habit building, you know, my number one recommendation would be again, surprise, surprise, sit down and reflect on a few things. But one of them would be, what is it that you want to do? Why do you want to do it? What's going to be the benefit of you doing it? And how can you just begin? So those are some basic reflection questions that, so if somebody says, oh, I want to lose 10 pounds, or, oh, I want to whatever, right? That's just an easy one, because so many people say after the Christmas holidays and stuff, they go, oh, I want to lose 10 pounds. So my question would be like, okay, well, why do you want to lose 10 pounds? And get them to really focus on, well, you know, I'll feel better, my clothes will fit better, I might have more energy, I also recognize that if I lose 10 pounds, I'm probably eating healthier foods. I'm not eating junk food, which means I just feel better in general. Mm-hmm. You know, how's it going to benefit me? And you could, you know, if you kind of lay out all of these, the reasons why you want to do something, that in and of itself helps you to motivate yourself, right? Yeah. The second thing though, is to think about, you know, and you bring up the notion of New Year's resolutions is, oh, I got to do this and I got to do that. I would like to invite people to connect to, when have you done this thing in the past successfully? And to remind yourself of your own capability, and to remind yourself of your own self-efficacy and awesomeness. Like, you know, like oftentimes when we want to do something, we go, I want to do it because I've done it before and it was really great. So yeah. Just reconnecting to your sense of possibility and your sense of purpose. And then again, going through those things, like I want to do this and then chunking it out. My favorite thing around setting goals and objectives and habits is like chunking it out into things that seem really super tiny and small. But once you start getting some traction with those, you start getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And all of a sudden it's awesome. So if you said, oh, I want to lose 10 pounds and we've gone through those reflection questions, then I would say, okay, well, when do you want to lose 10 pounds by? And is it reasonable? And is it actually healthy? Yeah, I want to lose 10 pounds by March the 30th. Okay, cool. So maybe it's like, I want to lose, you know, 3 pounds a month. Okay. Which is like, okay, now I want to lose like a pound-ish a week. Okay. So all of a sudden, like you're starting to chunk them out and put little tiny objectives in place that seem a lot more doable than like just the big thing, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, maybe it's like I need to get my upper body strength back. And like, I want to be able to do 20 push-ups, full on man-size push-ups, right?
Yeah.
So maybe I have to say, well, I just want to be able to do 5 by the end of this month. And then I want to be able to do 10 by the end of February. And I want to be able to do 15 by the end. Like, do you know what I mean? And I think then when you actually achieve those little tiny milestones and you celebrate yourself and you can look back and go, wow, a month ago I was here and now I'm here.
Yeah.
Because again, we go back to that conversation around culture and expectations and comparing ourselves. We can easily say, oh, I should be able to do this really fast without any penalty because look at that guy did it. Well, in many cases, it's actually not true. And in other cases, it's actually not that healthy. And it's certainly not that sustainable. Mm-hmm. So really taking the time before you commit to making any sort of change around habits, think about, what do I want? Why do I want it? How am I going to benefit? Who else might benefit? And then what can I actually do in small incremental ways that will bring success to me? You know, and how will I celebrate myself when I attain those small little goals?
Yeah, that's a perfect answer, especially where you talked about the chunking, because when I work with my clients for sleep, they have their long-term goal, which is, you know, stop hitting the snooze button or set my sleep schedule to this time or whatever it is. But, you know, in the midst of that big goal, every single week, I give them a little short-term goal to work on for the week ahead. And those short-term goals, that chunking leads to the overall goal that they basically hired me to solve. So I really like how you touched up on that.
Yeah, because we know from neuroscience and from neuropsychology that people are motivated by themselves reaching benchmarks of success, right? And that becomes more motivational to them. So then they start to think like, yeah, man, I'm awesome. And all of a sudden they're like, bring it in, coach. Like, what else can I do, right?
Yeah.
They have a real sense of themselves, a real sense of possibility. So that's such an important thing to consider. Don't try to, as they say, there's an old adage, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right?
Yes.
Which is, don't try to do the whole thing all at once.
Exactly. Awesome. So that pretty much wraps up all the main topics. And basically, to wrap up the main portion of the podcast before the quick fire questions, I want to ask you a question that I ask every single guest at the end, which is, what are your goals for the future? And this can be anywhere from 1 to 10 years. So we're looking a bit longer term.
Well, honestly, Mo, my goals are to stay as engaged and present and connected as I can every day of my life. And that means when I wake up in the morning, I write in my journal. I don't turn on my phone until that's done. It's on airplane mode. And I wake up and I think about what's important to me, who's important to me, and what am I going to do today to contribute to that alignment? And, you know, just by continuing to stay focused on that, I don't really go a week usually without ensuring that I'm investing in all of the important aspects of my life, whether it be, you know, health and wellness, whether it be creativity as an artist or as a musician, whether it be some sort of social or community service, whether it be, you know, some sort of self-care, whether it be some sort of learning. And so for me, my objective is to continue that process because it really keeps me engaged and expanding and growing, even though, you know, I'm a lot older than you. I'm in my 50s now. And I think that, you know, one of the quotes that I put in the book is, you know, people get old because they stop dreaming, because they stop engaging, because they stop learning, because they stop growing, because they stop like being fully engaged. And so my goal is just to stay as fully engaged and as expansive and as connected as I possibly can.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. I love that answer. So that pretty much wraps up the main portion of the podcast. And next up, I'm going to go into the quick fire questions, which are specifically made just for you.
Love it.
Awesome. Yeah. So there's four of them and, you know, quick fire, really quick. So the first one is favorite pastime. And I know you have a lot, but as far as this moment, what's your favorite pastime?
Favorite pastime. Well, walking the dog, is that a favorite pastime?
I can count. Yeah.
Yeah. I love walking. So I would say walking, and I'll add in, or playing the guitar or watching a really awesome series on Netflix.
Nice.
Or reading an amazing book. Any of those things. I know I gave you four and I only wanted one, but I can't help it. There's something cool to do.
It's okay. Second question would be favorite moment of 2020 amidst everything that happened.
Favorite moment of 2020, I will say getting my book published, becoming a published author for the first time in my life.
Nice. Third question, are you looking forward to anything this year? And if so, what is it?
I'm looking forward to, I haven't actually done any recording of my original music in a few years. So I'm actually looking forward to getting back in the studio and doing some recording and maybe doing some lyric videos. I haven't done those yet with my original work. So I always want to do something each year that, you know, kind of reconnects me to those things. And I'm going to get back in the studio and do some lyric videos.
Nice. Fourth question. If you can go back and do anything different, would you, and what would it be?
Short answer is no, because I've learned through all of the ups and downs and good decisions and bad decisions. But the longer answer would be, of course, I wish I could do over things that if they ever caused, you know, harm or upset to other people that I could, you know, that I could have been more self-evolved and had not caused any you know, undue pain or turmoil to others. I mean, I think it's normal as a human being who cares about others that that you would have regrets around, oh, geez, you know, I wish I hadn't hurt that person's feelings or whatever. And so there are certain decisions that I made that I look back and kind of wince and go, ooh. But at the same time, also, I believe so strongly that the only way that you learn and deepen wisdom is by going through life, good, bad, and sad, right? The good, the bad, and the ugly, it's all valuable. Yeah,
100%. And there is actually a fifth question on here. I guess I just missed it. And it's a bit of a playful one. What is your go-to favorite restaurant?
Ooh. Well, the one that pops into my brain right away is a vegan restaurant in Oakville, Ontario, which is just outside of Toronto, and it's called Community, and it does all vegan food, and it's based on locally sourced food, and it is absolutely unbelievable. It is a super cool place, and the food, I've never had anything there that is just not out of this world delicious.
Nice. Have you tried any vegan restaurants here in Ottawa?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I would love to, though. There's one called Pure Kitchen, so next time you're in town, you should definitely check it out.
Yeah. Well, and I will just say, I mean, you know, I think everybody knows we're talking in January 2021. I really am very concerned and very supportive of all the folks who are really struggling these days because of the pandemic, that, you know, all these amazing restaurants are really challenged with the lockdowns and with other things. And I really encourage people to, however and wherever possible, to continue to support local restaurants, because that in and of itself is such an important part of culture and community in a town.
100%. Yeah, hopefully when someone listens to this months or years down the line, then that would have sat really well at that moment.
That's right. That's right.
Awesome. So that pretty much wraps up the entire podcast. So Catherine, thank you so much for coming on. It was a pleasure.
Well, Mo, I really appreciate you inviting me, and I really enjoyed our conversation. I look forward to chatting with you again soon.
100%. And for everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you got a lot of value out of it. And I'll catch you guys in the next episode. Take care. So I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. If you did, go ahead and subscribe on whatever platform you're using to listen. And I'll catch you guys next Monday.